You've worked hard to build your brand, so why settle for one-size-all-fits branded clothing? Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your employees will truly want to wear that unites your team in comfort and style. It's why Lands' End Outfitters has been a branded apparel supplier to some of the world's most respected brands for more than 30 years. From logo polos to fully customized branded wardrobes, our world-class outfitters will partner with you to help your team feel confident on the job and put your brand into action, all backed by above and beyond expertise. See why Lands' End Outfitters should be your branded apparel partner. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code pod20 for 20% off your first product. That's business.landsend.com/pod20. Code pod20 for 20% off your first product.
He's the kind of man who wouldn't leave you a crumb on a plate. If City ring up this morning and say, come on then, what's the price? He will say it's X. It's not X minus 10%.
OTB AM, live weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. New normal, same old football. Paddy Power. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Now, very happy to say on the football show this evening, we are joined by Mr. David Myler. David, how you doing?
Joe, I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
Very well. I can sense that Cork optimism ahead of the weekend. Another All-Ireland coming your way. You can see the arrogance coming through already. I mean, Limerick, what's the point in showing up? We're Cork, we've got this. Oh. I understand where you are.
I don't know, is it that easy, Joe? Limerick are a very good team. But look, you have to be confident. Look, as a Cork man, we always feel that Cork are going to win the All-Ireland in hurling, certainly. Football has been, you know, we've had good years, we've had some bad years. But certainly in hurling, you always felt that Cork were one of the better, you know, teams in the All-Ireland. So we're hopeful. Obviously, I wish Kieran and his team the best. But it's going to be very difficult against Limerick.
When people talk about Corkness, I roll my eyes a touch. I don't really buy it. I look at a Roy Keane, I look at a Sonia O'Sullivan, I look at a Sean Oge, I look at a Rog, I look at a Dennis Irwin. I see totally different personality types, totally different motivations, totally different ways of going about their business. So I find all this Cork stuff a little tiresome, if I'm being honest. So do you want to put me in my box on that?
It's. I know where you're getting with it. For anyone from Cork, we kind of see ourselves as the capital. We're very proud Cork people. All the individuals you've named there, we're all probably a bit unique in our own manner. Certainly, Rog, you know, his views on rugby and his way of talking, you know, he's fascinating to listen to. There's a whole lot, but we're kind of a country inside a country down there. You know, that's just the way it is, and we want Cork people to do well. We don't want anyone else to do well, and we certainly have a grudge against Dublin people. You know, but that's just life, isn't it?
That's just life, yeah. So Cork thinks it's the capital.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's 100%. And you ask anyone who's from Cork will say Cork is the capital, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I find
that. No, get away from that.
I find that laughable. But good luck to you. I mean, whatever.
well, if Micheál stays in office for a few more years, you never know. Well, he's a good Cork man.
So listen, Owen, that should be a great final and we'll be talking about it across the week. So a few things to throw at you. The Harry Kane transfer saga was always going to become a saga, but it's getting very messy and it's just dominating at the moment, day after day after day. So the latest installment, and I sense this is because Harry Kane and his brother Charlie, I never knew Charlie was his name until this year, I sense they feel they're losing the PR war in certain ways, and Daniel Levy has played this, you know, with all the experience Daniel Levy has. So what has happened today is that the Telegraph boasts an exclusive, and I think it's safe to say that the Telegraph sources are the Canes. So It's Jason Burt here, and they're making it very clear in the Telegraph that the Kane camp were of the opinion that Harry Kane could leave Spurs if the club failed to win a trophy or if the club finished outside the top four last season. So they're saying there was a specific meeting with Daniel Levy. It was before last season. And the meeting went as such: if we don't make top four, if we don't win a trophy, Harry, you can leave. And that's where the Kane camp are coming from. That's why the Kane camp are so unhappy with the situation. Now, Pat Nevin was on Monday and he said he thinks in that instance Levy should honour his word and let him go. I hear a lot of other people in football saying, a gentleman's agreement, are you kidding me? Don't be so naive.
I would be alongside that frame of thought. A gentleman's agreement, I'd never believe. It has to be written down. Has to be, you know, pen and paper. Has to be, like, signed off and agreed. It stinks a bit. You just knew Harry Kane, he wants out. I don't think he wants to leave in the best way he can. I think certain circumstances, he's got to understand that he's going to upset some Tottenham fans. You know, he's been there his entire career. BHA, he's had some loan moves, but he wants out. He wants to go and be successful. I don't know if you saw that after Villarreal won the Europa League. The young boy, Julian Foyth. I think I've got that correct. He was like the 50th or 60th player who's played with Harry Kane, who's left Spurs to go on and win a trophy. And I think that's really starting to get to him, that he's not, like, for a player of his ability and his potential and everything, that he wants to be challenging for, you know, the Premier League title year in, year out. He wants to be in the back end of the Champions League, pushing to win that. He's, you know, you go away with England, like, you meet up and I don't care, even though, you know, Man City lost and Chelsea won, the players will still all congratulate the Chelsea lads as they come in, the Reece James, Mason Mounts, whatever. They'll be like, well done, lads. You've done, you know, really well or whatever. Congratulations. There was a clip on social media of, like, Jack Grealish talking to Jordan Henderson about, you know, the final and, like, the time they won it. It's a big conversation. I think Harry Kane wants to be part of that. He wants to be winning these trophies. And I think he has had enough. Like, if you look at the prime example of, he was due to return on the Monday. He doesn't return then, and, you know, there was obviously uproar that he skipped training, he's missed training. But what I find really bizarre, Joe, is why does, you know, his team, like his brother Charlie or Harry himself, you know, we see the power of social media. They're quick to tweet or post pictures when they win a game or when everything is going, you know, hunky-dory, that he could have come out and addressed the situation of him missing training and said, look, this is what's happened. I'm reporting what I'm due to report. Everybody is blowing this way out of proportion. But they waited so many different days to think, like, it doesn't make sense. Why wait so long that you leave everybody, you know, Sky jumped all over it. They blew it everywhere. It was all over, you know, probably English football, probably European football and world football. It was everywhere. And I think he does want out. Out of the starting 11 of the English team, he was the only player not to feature in a Premier League squad last weekend. I know Nuno said he's not up to speed or he's not up to fitness, but, you know, Calvin Phillips wasn't up to fitness. I know Bielsa's standards are a little bit different, but he was certainly involved in the squad. You look at Declan Rice played the 90 minutes. You know, there's a lot going on there. And I definitely do think Harry Kane wants out.
Well, even in the missing training initially, again, I agree with you totally, why they took so long to clarify it and why in the Telegraph there's more detail than was in his social media post doesn't make sense to me. It's like they're treating newspapers here like it's the 1990s and that's the only vehicle to get the word out. Because what it says in the Telegraph here is Kane believes he was offered an extended break by Daniel Levy, but that there was a breakdown in communication and this wasn't relayed to Nuno Espirito Santo. Kane had already booked a week's break in Florida. He was on his way from the Bahamas when it transpired he was expected back sooner, with the player eventually arranging to return via Paris to get back as best he could. So not only, like, was there miscommunication and he booked his trip to Florida, honestly, as soon as he got word, they thought he was due back. He didn't say, well, stuff you, I'm going to Florida. He got to Paris and got back. So it goes on to say, according to sources, I mean, let's just call this an interview with the Canes, for God's sake. According to sources, Kane felt he was given contradictory instructions and he hoped the club would clarify the mix-up, and sources suggest he's been left disappointed by the failure to do so, which has fueled the anger of some fans who believe he has let them down. Now again, I'm trying to guess what's going on the Levy side. Let's take Kane at his word here in the Telegraph. Mm-hmm. If you're Daniel Levy, I think there's a degree there of Kane values his relationship with the fans. Let's give him a little taste of how it will feel if the fans turn on him. Let's just keep the waters a bit muddy on his return to play. Because Spurs made it very clear to the media they thought he was due back. They certainly didn't say, oh, there's been a mix-up in communication. Harry honestly thought this, we honestly thought that. We're sorting it. They let it out there. And I think he's right to be a bit disappointed by that. I think they thought to themselves, well, let's just make sure we win this PR war, and let's give Harry a taste of fans not being happy. And that's why you see things like, are you watching Harry Kane at the end of the game on Sunday?
And I think you're taking on the wrong person. I think the Kane's taking on Daniel Levy. It's a bad decision. Here, look, there's been a lot of things, though, that have kind of really raised my eyebrow. Like the interview he did with Gary Neville on the overlap. You're kind of like going, what? Who sanctioned this? Nobody at the club at Tottenham would have allowed that to happen. I know it's Harry Kane. I know he's England captain. I get all that. But the fact that he's on there talking, talking about his future and talking about, that he was at a crossroads. It's just been a lot of, a lot of stuff that he's done that kind of makes me think like more and more that he definitely does want out. And the whole fact that, he's trying to take on Levy. There's only going to be one winner. Sir Alex Ferguson, who people laud as one of the greatest managers, he said if he ever needed someone for negotiation, he'd ask Daniel Levy. Like, he's a master of what he does. Now, the miscommunication, if you're Nuno and you're coming into a new job, the first question you're going to be asking about your key players, like, what's Harry Kane's situation? That will probably be after he signed his contract. That's the first thing. What I found very interesting was Nuno came out and said he hadn't spoken to Harry, even though that was small detail. But nowadays with phones, WhatsApp, everything, you can get hold of a manager or a player within 5 or 10 minutes. We saw Son, he comes back, signs a new contract. Like, that situation was taken care of very quickly. Whereas this is seeming to linger in the background. And then the whole fact of like Tottenham going on the performance they put in against City, going on winning the game. There'd be a question of like, do we need Harry Kane? And it's crazy that I even say that, because he's such an exceptional player and he is one of the best strikers, probably only just behind Lewandowski, as the best number nine in the world. But there is a different dynamic and a different flow to Spurs when he doesn't play.
Yeah. And so let's assume that conversation did happen, because I doubt Harry Kane is making it up, and his behaviour suggests he feels he's been wronged here, that conversation happened before last season. Top four or else you let me go. I would also have to presume Daniel Levy did say in that conversation, well, you'll have 3 years left on your deal, I'll let you go once they meet the valuation. I'm sure that's the part the Canes aren't emphasising here. Where we seem to be at now, based on the media reporting, is that, and this made me laugh, City have offered 125 million sterling, and then the line was, Levy is refusing to sell and is no longer accepting calls. Like, if Levy at the back of his mind is thinking to himself, look, we're going to have to sell him. I can't keep him here under duress. It's just bad vibes. Even if I do think Kane will be professional and settle down and knuckle down, I don't know if I can keep him here for 3 years. If that's what he's thinking, he's played this beautifully, because it really looks like he's not going to sell. And if City are at 125 million now, I suspect he'll get them up to 150 in the next 14 days.
Oh, and look, the whole fact that Tottenham beat Man City, and they were like, anyone who watched Man City will be saying, like, you're a Manchester City supporter, you're saying we're crying out for a striker to replace Aguero. Jesus is a good player, but he's not up to that standard. And it's kind of like, can you imagine Pep going back, after the weekend, we need to get a striker. And he said openly that he wants Kane. So that would be driving it. And Levy knows what he's doing. He'll get every single penny for Harry Kane. He won't sell for anything less than what he thinks he's worth. Mm. Like Harry Kane, even in that interview I touched on with Gary Neville, he tried to set his own price that if, Daniel was offered 100 million, then he might take it. He's trying to almost set his own price, like, which is just
he might as well look
crazy.
Looked to camera and said, wouldn't you, Daniel, come on, 100 million, please.
So are you watching, Daniel?
What's your sense of, say, Levy is being genuine, say this is a negotiation, and because Jonathan Northcroft in the Sunday Times, and again that felt like more of a leak from the Levy camp, and it was front page Sunday Times, and it was, look, Spurs feel even if they get the 150, 160 million now, it doesn't leave them with enough time to spend that money well between now and the closing of the transfer deadline day. So they're keeping him regardless. You can offer what you want, City. Say that's true for a second. Say Levy and Nuno have sat down and said, he's not for sale, doesn't matter, we're going to keep him. How would you feel about that in that dressing room? Like, keeping a player who so desperately wants to go, has made it so public, it's been a big fiasco. Do you think that settles down in a week or two, knowing the personality Kane is, and it's all fine? Or would you have misgivings as, say, a senior player in the dressing room about keeping Harry Kane under these circumstances?
I think certainly with the type of person Harry is, he is a top end professional. There is no, you know, we've seen all the ex Sky players and pundits, whatever you want to call them, Gary Neville's, and that's, you know, speak about his professionalism. The times I've come across him, and the people I know who are very close to him all speak about how, you know, how much of a top professional he is. So I don't think it would be an issue if he does stay at Spurs. I think for the players, the other players in the changing room, it's kind of like they're probably at the point where they want it resolved. I had something similar years ago when we were relegated. We had Jelovic, like Snodgrass, Livermore, all those players had sniffs of Premier League clubs, and you could tell that they weren't in it. I wasn't going to begrudge them. They were going to Premier League clubs, which inevitably they all did. But it was kind of like, can we get it done so that then we can move forward and see what we've actually got left? You know, what's around us, who's coming in, that we can kind of galvanize the squad and, you know, move forward. I think that's probably the biggest thing for Nuno as well, is like, I want to plan with Harry Kane, but if I have to plan without him, then can I know, and can we make this, you know, happen as quickly as possible and kind of get on with things, because it can be long drawn out. The last thing you want is Harry Kane, you know, I presume he's back training, then he, you know, he's available to feature in the Premier League squad this weekend. Like, that would be a big tell whether or not he starts or whatever.
Yeah.
But then does he go on the, you know, the last day of the transfer window, because City just say, right, how much do you want? They say 150 million. Sheikh Mansour writes a check for 150 million, away he goes. You kind of leave Tottenham shorthanded, and the players are a bit annoyed that, you know, he was there and then they thought he was staying and then he's gone. So there is all those kind of like small little details. So I imagine, you know, for Tottenham, they'll want it addressed pretty much straight away.
Yeah. And I guess one last one on this, because we've given it 12, 13 minutes and we've talked about it a lot on the show, obviously, but it is an ever-changing story. So let's say you're a mate of Kane's, or somebody in that position comes to you. I mean, it strikes me now there's a degree here of like, how much do you want this? How ugly are you prepared to go here? And by that, I mean, hand in a transfer request. It was very clear in that Telegraph piece, no transfer request handed in, because there's money at stake there. So will you hand in a transfer request? And ultimately, will you down tools? Like, are you ready to risk Spurs fans really leaving, you know, you leaving with the bad taste in the mouth and them maybe not liking you so much? Because he may have to force this through. I think a big part of where Spurs are is they know Kane will come good and be a good boy if he has to.
Yeah, yeah. If I was Harry Kane, I would. I'd hand in the transfer request and
dig in.
I wouldn't down tools, though. I couldn't down tools. I think that's just not my makeup. I would still train hard because I would want to move to Manchester City to go and compete for Premier League titles, Champions League titles.
When I say down tools, train hard, would you make yourself available for selection?
No.
That's downing tools in my book. You're training for Man City.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's
Yeah. Okay. When you say down tools, because I know lads who've interrupted training sessions. Like if you're doing a possession, lads are picking up the ball with their hands and booting it away because they want to transfer. And you're just causing all sorts of drama.
That'd be an escalation.
That's where I was going with downing tools.
That's even just too childish for me to have considered as an option, right? Okay, so picking up the ball and booting it away is an option. I didn't know was on the menu.
Oh, yeah. Just running around trying to, like, flying into tackles, like, just purposely ruining training sessions where, like, the players are at the point where they're getting annoyed that they're turning to the manager saying, just get rid of him, like, leave him go. Yeah, that's happened.
Common?
Various occasions.
Common?
It depends on the transfers.
Okay.
Like Harry Kane, Harry Kane's not that type of person. I would say it's common. Right. I imagine if you ask, you know, say Damien's probably come across it where, look, there's the famous one about John Walters and Roy Keane in The Office. You know what I mean? You don't know if John then was down in tools because he had the opportunity to go to Stoke in the Premier League.
The thing about Delaney is he'll name names. I think you're not quite there.
yeah. That's, you see, all us Cork people are slightly different, but we're very unique in our own way. Damien's a bit more cutthroat at times.
He is, yeah. No, he'd name and shame. Well, okay, look.
Well, I'll give you a name. So Jake Livermore was one when we were at Hull. Marco Silva just taken over. We were doing a session. It was Marco's first day, and somebody was offside. Jake, we were short players. Jake was centre half in a thing, and the line stood up, and the player was offside. He was clearly offside, like. But Marco said, "Play on," just so that the striker could have a finish. And Jake, like, when the keeper rolled the ball out, Jake caught it and booted it over the pitch, hit a house out the back. Yeah, and then it was kind of like everybody calmed down. But then inevitably, a week or two later, he left and went to West Brom.
Right. Mm. I don't see Kane doing that, to be fair. But
no, I don't either.
Training away, but I guess if he's not available for, like, he's not going for this European match now this week. They're saying he's not fit. But if we don't see him available to play from the
Saturday
bench, 20 minutes from the bench Saturday, then that's a big sign that he's as close to Downing Tools as he'll get to.
Yeah, that's if he's not available for the Premier League game this weekend, he's gone. 100% in my book. Mm. Because like you said there, even though I know they have the whatever it is, the Europa League qualifying, whatever it's called, these added European tournaments for money, he'll still train a full week leading into that game, and he'll have trained last week when he came back. That, like, these are top professionals nowadays, that even though Hardy would have had his 3 or 4 weeks off, he wouldn't have become too unfit that he would pick it, you know, straight back up, that he would be available. Mm. And certainly as Mr. Tottenham, you know, their front man, you'd probably get an exception that you wouldn't have to train even as hard or as much, because the manager wants you straight back in.
Yeah. To segue out of that then, I saw Ronaldo came out very unhappy that he'd been linked with Real Madrid, a return to Real Madrid, and the Daily Mirror are saying, you know, Manchester City have been offered Ronaldo. He's into the last 12 months of his Juventus contract. But it just struck me, and you'd have a real sense of S&C, and you'd have a real sense of the demands in the game now. So Ronaldo's 36, and obviously he looks still being offered around to big clubs, I suspect for big money. We saw Messi going at 34, again, big money. Is, and Ibrahimovic, you know, Cavani, all these guys going longer and longer. Is S&C getting to a point, in your opinion, where, I don't know, over the next 10 years, players are going to peak later and later, and it won't just be the freaks who are commanding big money at 38? Like, could you imagine a situation in 10 years where S&C is such that your average Premier League starting 11 might have 1-2 outfield 38-year-olds as kind of standard? Is that where we're heading, do you think?
I don't know. I think examples you've used, your Cristianos, your Cavani's, your Zlatan's, even Lionel, I think they're exceptions in terms of, you know, their physical attributes and the way they've looked after themselves over their careers. I think they're just incredible athletes. Another example is James Milner played last weekend, ran 12.65 kilometres, the most of any other Premier League player, 35 years of age. I don't think the average age will start to creep up. I do think there will be the odd occasion where a player does prolong his career, but the examples we've used, they've never really had, you know, serious injuries in terms of, you know, cruciate ligaments or, you know, tearing all the ankles, your ATFL ankle ligaments or whatever, that you've been put probably on the back burner. Like James Milner has never sustained a serious injury. He's had muscle issues, which is obviously maintainable with strength and conditioning and looking after yourself, which he's a model pro. I just can't see that, you know, players are going to, you know, keep going and going. Mm. I think there will be the odd exception here and there, like the examples of Teddy Sheringham playing till he was 40 plus, Ryan Giggs playing at United till he was 40. It will be the odd one, but I can't see over the case of a league having 1, 2, 3 players all pushing over 35, 36.
Yeah, interesting, because I was just next of Kane being 28, going on 29, a lot of money, unless they think they're going to get 7, 8 years out of him. So listen, we've loads more to talk about. We're going to take a short break. Football and Off the Ball is with thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie is the place to check out. We've got loads more to chat to David Myler about next.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. gamblingcare.ie.
Now, you're very welcome back. Happy to say David Myler is with us. We're chatting about various bits and bobs. One to throw at you. Sorry, I'm springing this on you, but I just saw this before coming on air. Raul Jimenez of Wolves. It's great to see him back and playing and made his recovery. Just, I know you've come through serious injury yourself, and it's quite interesting reading his interview. So, Raul Jimenez, I think everyone remembers last November against Arsenal, had the skull fracture. I was watching the game. It was a gruesome kind of moment when he clashed heads with David Luiz. So he's back training. He played 90 minutes for Wolves against Leicester, and he was talking about how lucky he was. So Raul Jimenez says here, there was the skull fracture, the bone broke, and there was a little bit of bleeding inside the brain. It was pushing my brain to the inside. That's why the surgery had to be so quick. It was really a great job by the doctors. And then of his career, he says, he was warned there are now big risks with continuing, or certainly risks, he said. But because they're doctors, they have to tell you the truth and you have to take it. The skull fracture did take a bit longer than we all expected to heal, but it's a miracle to be here. And then of the day itself, he says, all I can remember is we arrived at the stadium, left my things in the dressing room, ran out onto the pitch to see the pitch. And then we returned to the dressing room and then it's lights out. I remember nothing else. I can remember first waking up in hospital. So he decided he wanted to watch the footage back, and to watch the footage back non-stop of what happened. So his logic is as follows. He says, I asked the physio to send me videos from every angle, different sides of the pitch. I wanted to see what happened. For me, it was like it had never happened in my memory, so I wanted to see. And he goes on to say how he felt that would help him understand what had happened or what he could have done to avoid it. And he's obviously wearing headguard gear now, which he doesn't want to wear, interestingly. So he says that the doctors have insisted he wear padding around the area. And on coming back, and I guess this is akin to like when players say shipping the first tackle when they're back from an injury, he talked about like the first headers, and in particular like headers near where the injury happened. He said the first time heading was when I was on my own with a physio, the first days of pre-season. I was a bit nervous. I went to head the ball with caution, not scared, but knowing, okay, I'm going to head the ball on the side for the first time, so be careful. But then when I headed the ball, I realized nothing had happened, so the next one came and I did it like I used to before. And Wolves at the moment are still limiting the number of headers he does in training. He says just for a couple more months. So it's amazing he's able to be back playing football and heading the ball and played 90 minutes at the weekend. Because I have to say, I don't know what you thought, but when the injury happened and then you read about his intent to return, I never quite felt Peter Cech, for instance, was quite the same after the Stephen Hunt incident. And Peter Cech wasn't heading the ball all that often either.
Well, I would use the example of Ryan Mason, who's with me at Hull when he suffered skull fracture against Chelsea. I actually came on from in the game, and like listening there to you speak about Raul is just it's simply a miracle to talk like that. It was close to life or death. That almost all football thoughts go out the window. To see him back is fantastic. It just really is crazy, because I remember I was rehabbing a knee injury, and I was actually spent quite a lot of time with Ryan, and he was never heading the ball. It was never thought about. He went to see various different, experts. Three told him that he couldn't come back. There was one said potentially could come back. But to see Raul back, obviously playing 90 minutes, and that is fantastic. It is, when you look back on it, I do remember the incident, like the clash of heads is always that worried one, when a defender comes kind of flying out. I'm not saying for a second David Luiz meant it or anything, but when you do see heads kind of coming close together and then the force that's in them, it is scary and it is worrying. But look, I wish him all the best. I hope he's fine. And I've no doubt that Wolves will look after him, that they will limit, his heading or whatever, that he will be okay.
Be interesting to watch him over the next few weeks. Like, God, you'd forgive him for not wanting to go in for a high impact 50-50 header. Like, just to lose your nerve a touch would be so forgivable.
Yeah, 100%. And as much as he's probably in a protected environment with the physios or in training, that in a game, the balls move at different angles. It's very hard to recreate an on-field experience as opposed to with a physio when you're working like that. I remember one time coming back from my own cruciate, the physio at the time, Dave Biddingsley, had gone to our video analyst at Sunderland and had asked them to print out all my movements in 90 minutes. We actually went out on the pitch and I had to recreate. So it might be like walk, then sprint 20 yards to the right, slide tackle. I was almost trying to recreate the whole thing as kind of a test to kind of like put me through my... It's very difficult as well when you're one man running around a pitch on your own trying to recreate, you know, movements you've done for 90 minutes with no fans, no other like players or opposition.
And sorry to interrupt, I would think as well, your brain knows what's next each time so you can protect yourself a touch.
Yeah, and there's also that point of if an opposition player is running down the wing and I'm going for a tackle, you're going to obviously slide tackle in, but you're going to hit him hard. You know, you're going to win the ball, don't get me wrong, but you want to leave your mark to let him know like that I'm not going to leave you come down this wing willy-nilly or come through the middle of the pitch. But when you're unopposed, you can kind of lightly slide and kind of feel your way into it. So when Raul is back on the pitch, there's going to be balls flying everywhere. If, you know, just for argument's sake, say whoever they play in the game gets a bit hot and bothered, you know, say the opposition players get a bit wound up because of a referee's decision. And then there's, you know, ball played up long and a centre half as they do come flying over the top. You almost worry a slight bit about stuff like that where kind of common sense kind of goes out the window. That someone is just so eagerly desperate to win the ball that they don't. It's kind of almost a reckless challenge, which we see once or twice every weekend.
Yeah. Well, we wish him well and hopefully he does get back to, you know, throwing himself at headers and being the player he was. And it's interesting, he wanted to look at the incident from every angle a million different times. I mean, I'd say some players say, oh, I don't want to see, I don't want to have that in my brain. He wanted to see if there was anything he could have done differently. So that's Raúl Jiménez back playing for Wolves. It's amazing from the weekend just gone. So much happened right from Brentford Arsenal through to Spurs against Man City, crowds back, and still Pogba manages to be one of the centres of attention. Because I was chatting to you briefly before we came on air and I was saying, anything else from the weekend? And you were kind of saying, well, like, it's amazing over in the UK, Pogba talk dominating. Yeah. So you've played against him. You have this lovely perspective that Mick Richards and Asunes don't necessarily have. And you'd know his weak points for sure as well. And I'm sure you plan to expose those weak points as a team. And equally, you'd know how devastatingly good he is. So it's a weird one, Pogba. I feel like we talk about him too much, almost. Like, he must, I hope he manages to tune out from it. He must sometimes think, why am I, like, topic number one? If there's, like, five talking points from every weekend, it's like, how did Pogba play?
That's what happens when you're a global superstar, because that's what he is. He's a phenomenal player. You talk about the times I played against him. There's no real weakness. Like, he's 6'3". Like, he's quick, he's strong, right foot, left foot, good in the air, very skillful. He's got every club in the bag in terms of his range of passing. You look at, like, the assists, like the first one to Bruno was probably my favourite, where the quick ball around the corner, just to see him at a glimpse when the ball is moving, you know, when it comes in from McTominay. Like, even the one for Greenwood, it's more of a kind of a standard pass for him, a player of his ability. But That's probably what you get with Paul Pogba. Obviously, we've all seen Mika Richards take on Souness. I've watched, you know, their argument or whatever. I know the two of them personally. I think Graham is probably from the older school. That's kind of like you roll your socks up, you tie your boots, and you work hard. Certainly wasn't social media in those days, but it was kind of like, there was nothing outside of football, whereas nowadays the game has changed so much that Graham is probably the older generation where, you know, they're not used to these players being, I'm not going to say bigger than clubs, but like
their own brands almost.
Yeah, like it's wrong of me to say that or for even say that Paul Pogba is bigger than Manchester United because he's not, but Paul Pogba is his own entity. He's massive all around the world. That, like, he's looked at probably in a marketing all around the world. You know, we saw the effect of Lionel Messi at PSG, but Pogba is similar to that.
Yeah. And David, so you get a sense when you've been on a pitch with a player, you have a deeper sense of their their strengths and weaknesses than any of us looking in, these minute moments that you can only sense. The two big accusations thrown at Pogba, did you feel his work rate was so-so at times? And secondly, did you feel defensively he would lose concentration and you could sneak in behind him and he'd drift, say he was one of the holding two, he'd drift out of his area and leave Manchester United exposed? Did you sense that on the pitch? Did you see that when you were doing your pre-match analysis and going through the tapes?
Paul's not an outright holding midfielder. So he's a maverick type midfielder who wants to get on the ball, wants to get forward, wants to make things happen. If you look at the teams that he's played for in his men's career, Juventus, France and Manchester United, in large, those three teams should dominate possession. So he should be afforded with not having to do as much defensive, duties. Like, you always feel that you can kind of get at them. Certainly a player like Paul, if you give him too much time and space. My way would all, I grew up obviously with a GA background. My way was always kind of like, can I get into his face and get up against him and say, how much do you fancy this? Because if I go toe to toe with Pogba in terms of ability, I'm going to lose every day of the week.
Mm.
But I would then say, how much do you want this? Where you're elbowing and kneeing and, grabbing hold of someone and you're really trying to, a bit like Cork and Kilkenny last week when the referee's trying to, throw the slitter in. There's slapping and there's belting before the game. That's the way you have to approach fellas like him.
Typical Cork dirtiness for any UK listeners.
Yeah, I can take that.
When we're talking about Cork at the top of the show, that's what we meant. Just
but
not.
It's just,
and how much? What was the answer? What was Pogba's answer, do you think, to how much did he want it?
At times you could upset him and he would get frustrated, but other times he'd laugh you off. And when he'd laugh me off, I'd be the one who'd get more annoyed because I'm thinking, I'm not getting under his skin. I'm not frustrating him. I'm not annoying him where he can take his eye off the ball. That's I remember the first time I ever played against Paul Pogba would have been 2011, I'd say. 2010, 2011, I was coming back from my first knee injury. We played the Man United on reserve team / under-23s.
Mm.
And all the young boys in the Sunderland changing room were all raving about Pogba. Obviously, I was a first-team player at the time coming back from injury. I hadn't heard a lot about him. I remember, on the pitch, I thought, wow, this fella has... he had everything that I've described to you as... I don't know how old he would have been there because we're going back a long time ago. I think he's 26, 27, probably 17, 18. He had every attribute. He had a great size. But I looked at it like, I suppose, most Irish players, can we get into their faces and kind of upset them? And I always took that with me when I played against him. I knew that I couldn't afford to give him time on the ball because, you looked at it, Leeds made that. Obviously, they do their man-to-marking system. It didn't work the other day because whenever Pogba got free, he came off the left. He looked dangerous and he created so much.
Mm. And how did you get on that time 10 years ago?
We actually won 4-3. I scored.
Pogba scored a hat-trick.
No, probably didn't. I think he might have got one. Those games were minutes in the bank for me coming back from injury.
Mm.
More than... But look, he's always going to divide opinions because he's a maverick in terms of social media, his flamboyant hair, the way he carries himself. But when you strip all the crap away and you really look at him, he is a phenomenal player. The biggest question mark over him is his consistency.
Yes, well, that's the point. Because I think, in fairness to Souness, and I do accept your point, I do think there is a bit of the elder statesman looking on and kind of comparing it to his day and just a bit dismayed by it all. But I do think Souness is open-minded enough to go along with all the extracurricular stuff if he felt Pogba was doing it on the pitch. And I do think Souness genuinely thinks Pogba is not delivering. I do think there is definitely a genuine point of view there. He doesn't feel like, Souness has said, with his attributes, he should be up and down the pitch making life an absolute nightmare for any midfielder trying to stick with him. He should be scoring goals, he can do everything. Souness sees all the attributes but doesn't feel he delivers. You said there he's divisive. So which side of that argument do you come down on? If it was to boil down to a Manchester United are better off without him or with him?
I think Manchester United are better with him. I think he's got the perfect manager. I think Ollie can put up with a lot of the nonsense. You look at the form that Pogba came back into after Mino Raiola came out, sprouting off. Like, I think Ollie is the perfect man manager for him. I think he knows how to deal with him, and he will get the best out of Pogba in a United shirt. Mm. It would be certainly interesting if Ollie wasn't have a good run of form this year, and you know, he ended up losing his job and somebody else came in, like a Conte type. You know, would he put up with it? I don't know.
Mm.
You know, that's the big thing. But that's part and parcel of being a manager. You've got to be able to manage
the
characters and understand them. And I think United are better with him. He seems to have turned the form in the last probably 12 to 16 months. But it's just, again, there's that massive question mark over his consistency.
Mm. So you mentioned Conte there. It's amazing. Arsenal, it's a classic first week of the season overreaction. So already today, and I get there's a degree of like, it's Wednesday after the weekend, so there's a bit of scrambling for stories. So looking around, quite a few places had like Arteta first to get the sack, very much favoured to get the sack at Arsenal. And there was speculation over who might replace him. I was amazed to see the bookies have Brendan Rodgers as favourite for that job. Now, amazed not that Brendan Rodgers would be considered, amazed that they think Brendan Rodgers would go anywhere near it. Or am I reading this wrong? Is there like a sort of old school Arsenal or a certain tier of club that Rodgers would have his head turned? Like, I just couldn't imagine it. And like, you throw in Silent Stan and the ownership model as well. Not a very appetising fit right now for anyone Arsenal, I would think.
No. And I think if they really wanted Brendan Rodgers, they would have taken Brendan Rodgers before they got Arteta, before he's had, like, you know, the success with Leicester, winning the FA Cup, pushing the, you know, I know they've fallen short in the Champions League, but pushing that, you know, top four for the last two seasons. Brendan Rodgers won't go to Arsenal. I think he's got too good of a project. There's just such a good feeling with Leicester.
Yeah.
You know, the way from the ownership down, the way the club is ran, everything that goes, you know, even the brand of football, Brendan's been able to stamp his authority on it. I think everything good. I think if Brendan was to leave Leicester, I genuinely believe he won't go back to Liverpool. I think that kind of, you know, ship has sailed. I could probably see him at Manchester City after Guardiola.
Mm.
It's an interesting one for you.
No, I hear what you're saying. On Arsenal at the moment, what's kind of going to be interesting now is for Stan Kroenke and everybody there, they're no longer making money. You know, they'd been a fairly reliable Champions League money incomes. Accountants love the situation, and, you know, we finish whatever it ended, not the end of the world. They're now not making money, and part of that is COVID for sure, but part of it as well is what's going on the pitch. And even I was reading the other day, they haven't sold out the available tickets for the game, their first home game of the season, which again is kind of unusual. So Edu has been in there since 2019 as sporting director. You kind of wonder, might what's going on at the moment prompt them to take serious action? And it was when you said Conte, it kind of made me think, like, if they needed somebody to get hold of the club, Conte would do it. Now, the really interesting dilemma is, if Conte's doing it, he's doing it on his terms. And it's like, how willing are they to let Conte come in and, I would say, cause havoc for 6 months?
I think it'll be longer than 6 months, Joe. Because, look, we've got 2 weeks left in this window. So by the time Mikel Arteta, say, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but loses his job and say Conte has got the job, he's going to need two transfer windows to clear out what he feels is dead weight, to bring in the players he wants to...
Mm.
Like, the big thing with Conte, we saw that when he was linked to Tottenham, he wants full control of everything. Like, it's almost as if he doesn't answer to anyone in the club.
You'd back him to get results. Like, you'd back him to sort out whatever culturally there is all rotten. He would just cut through it.
Yeah, well, as you said there, Silent Stan would just have to, you know, stand back and give him the transfer fund and just say, okay, I'm going to have to trust where this guy is going with this and what he's trying to do.
Mm.
Look at the success he had with Juventus, then he goes to Chelsea, has success, back to Inter Milan, and, you know, to knock Juventus off their perch, which is an incredible feat.
Mm.
Then he walks away because they have to sell players because they're in so much debt. Like, if he was going to Arsenal, he needs, like, I couldn't see how it would work with, you know, Edu as the sporting director kind of saying, like, oh, we're looking at this fella, and he's going, well, I'm looking in a different direction. you know, that's the big thing with Conte. He needs full control of everything to do it his way. But I don't mind that, and I respect that, because if it goes wrong, there's no kind of finger pointing. It's like, well, they're your players. You didn't want these. You wanted these. The results aren't good enough. And he'd probably hold his hands up and say, do you know what? Yeah, you're right, because I've done everything my way.
I mean, he's right more often than he's wrong, I guess. But like, you just feel like Arsenal need something dramatic at this stage. They need a figure like that to come in and just rip the whole thing up. Because at the moment, I don't know, it must be so dispiriting being an Arsenal supporter for the last decade.
Oh, I couldn't imagine it. My uncle's an Arsenal supporter. I haven't spoken to him in a while, but I'd hate to think what he's going through. Like, I grew up when football was really relevant in my mind, and I could understand it. With the Uniteds and the Arsenals were toe-to-toe, and you look at the battles those teams have. But if you look at the Arsenal team with, you know, Adams and Bowles, Seaman, Dixon, Winterburn, like Vieira, like, and obviously Sol Campbell, Keown, Petit, you know, Henri, like, those were gigantic Arsenal teams, you know, with serious men, with serious presence. You know, we hear all the ex-pundits, especially Roy, talk about characters. They were big, big characters. But you look at this Arsenal team, and like, oh, we've all seen, you know, the analysis of the game against Brentford on the Friday. It was just Arsenal being Arsenal-y. Do you know that kind of way? It was just like, you know, the set goal, too soft. You know, it's a long throw, get bullied around the place. It's just Arsenal. You look at their team, there's no kind of... They lack backbone. They lack that. It's I don't even know what to say about them. It's like, you know, you look at the characters they have with the Vieira. Do you think, like, if Vieira was playing, even if you just had Vieira, that would have been acceptable the other day? You know, that like Tony Adams, you know, Martin Keown, those kind of fellas. Say what you want about their abilities. Certainly you couldn't question Vieira, but they were big men and big characters. Now there's just no spine in the team. All nicey-nice. Even I watched Premier League years. I was on Sky the other day, and even at the time under Wenger, towards the end where they had Rizicki, Wilshere, Cazorla, they still played a brand of football that was unique, that they could get away without having huge characters in their team. But they could dominate teams, even if they played Manchester City. You knew Arsenal were always going to play this attractive, sexy football. But they've lost everything.
Yeah.
And it just seems a big mess.
It's amazing when you think about it, that when you said there, God, it was so Arsenal-y on Friday, that everyone knows exactly what you mean. And that is so different to what was the case 15 years ago. Like, it's turned on its head in the space of, you know, generation, which is kind of an insane turnaround. So, I don't know. I was going to say, like, when you said there, like, character, I just wonder as well, does something about the place infect even individuals who in other places can really do something? And I was thinking of Xhaka's performance in the Euros when it was real backs against the wall. And Xhaka at Arsenal is just so different. It's like, just culturally, something gets into the psyche of the players and they feel like, well, for Arsenal, this is how I can behave. But my God, at the Euros for my country, over my dead body, are we losing this game? And you think, what's the disconnect there? And because, like, the Xhaka is a perfect example of someone who's like, can't work out what's going on here, or what's not going on, as the point is.
Like, his performance in the Euros were incredible. Now, I'm probably one of those as well, that playing for your country is slightly different. There's that bit of pride and passion. Not saying it's not there with your club, but certainly to a higher level that you know, with your country, you hear the national anthem, there is that kind of backs against the wall. I certainly had those feelings with Ireland. But that's the thing is, at Arsenal, it's kind of just nicey-nice. Everything is kind of hunky-dory, and we live in London. We get paid thousands of pounds a week. It's just nice. There's no, like, do you know what the hardest thing about it? Arsenal are a massive football club. They're renowned around, like, world football. And it's just a shame, really, to see them where they are and that they're not up challenging. You know, if we were to talk about the top four, it'd be Liverpool, Manchester United, Manchester City, and Chelsea. And it's kind of Arsenal just gone away by the side.
Yeah.
Like, if you were to ask anyone, how long do you think it would take Arsenal to get back to the level of competing with them for? You're looking at years.
Yeah. Get Conte in ASAP, see what happens. Listen, great stuff. Really enjoyed that, David Myler.
Thank
enjoy the All-Ireland final on Sunday. Were you tempted to fly over for it, or are you going to feed up at home?
I was tempted, yeah, but it's just PCR tests, flights, everything. It's not as straightforward as it used to be. You know, I could usually jump on a flight in Dublin at 10 o'clock in the morning, meet a few people, and then you're back out that evening. And it's just obviously with COVID, everything's slightly different, but I'll be watching.
Mm.
Hopefully I can jump on with you now next week and just be like, oh.
Listen, if Cork win, I don't want to see you next week. I'm not listening to it.
Well, you're surrounded because you were interviewing Damien yesterday. I imagine you'll be on with Rog soon with the rugby.
Yeah.
I don't know, you might get Sonia or Rob Heffernan on for the athletics. Who else have we got?
Now that you mention it, a panel, I wouldn't mind hosting a panel with you, Rog, and Delaney. No preparation in advance. Just put up the mics and just see where we go. That's something for a quiet Tuesday night.
I don't think you'd get a word in. I don't want to. I think the three of us would probably start arguing about different topics.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we'd all probably agree that we want Cork to win.
Yes. No, you'd all agree that Cork is the best.
Oh, yeah.
Listen, good man. Thanks a million. Appreciate it.
Thank you, John.
Cheers. David Myler with us there on the football show this evening, with thanks to Paddy Power for information on responsible gambling. Visit gamblingcare.ie. So that was the football show. David Delaney was with us yesterday. Well worth listening back. He was very good on Crystal Palace. We don't often talk about Palace. Kevin Kilbane, Pat Nevin with us on the Monday before that. So loads of good stuff this week on the football show.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. New normal, same old football. Paddy Power. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
You've worked hard to build your brand, so why settle for one size all fits branded clothing? Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your employees will truly want to wear, all backed by above and beyond expertise. See why Lands' End Outfitters has been a branded apparel supplier to some of the world's most respected brands for more than 30 years. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code pod20 for 20% off your first product. That's business.landsend.com/pod20, code pod20, for 20% off your first product.